This is the Fearless Presentations Podcast, the fastest, easiest way to reduce public speaking fear.
Want to absolutely eliminate public speaking fear? This podcast is the answer. Here's the guy who literally wrote the book on fearless presentations, Doug Stannert. So, Doug, what's today's hot topic?
So, our hot topic today is how to eliminate public speaking fear in three easy steps. And step one, the very first thing that you want to do if you want to totally eliminate your public speaking fear is you have to figure out where exactly that public speaking fear is coming from. And I'll give you some examples. I'll kind of show you how the public speaking fear is kind of similar to other fears that we have. Anytime you do something for the first time, you're going to be somewhat nervous about that thing, whether that's a skill or whether you're doing something unknown. Well, when you do it for the first time, there's going to be some type of nervousness, some type of anxiety in that process. If the higher the risk of failure or the higher of danger, the more danger that's involved in that skill or that new activity, the more likely the nervousness will have increased, right? So I give you some examples. Like, for instance, in class, in the two-day public speaking class that we teach all over the United States, Canada, Europe, one of the first things that a lot of our instructors will kind of use as an example is learning to drive a car. And the reason why is because the very first time you get into a car when you're, you know, you might be 14 or 15 years old, maybe 16, the first time you get behind the wheel, it's a nerve-wracking experience. And a lot of us can kind of remember that. Even though we kind of forget a lot of the details, we still remember that very first time that we had to get on the freeway, for instance, one of those kind of things. While we're in the parking lot at the school, okay, it's nerve-wracking. You know, there's some nervousness involved in that, but there's not an imminent risk of death or anything. So as a result, we're not nearly as nervous trying to pull into the orange cones as what we are when we get out when there's other traffic around us, right? So driving a car is a good example. One that's kind of even closer is riding a roller coaster, right? Now, so if you think about it, there is a very small risk of death if you're riding a roller coaster. You know, you see the YouTube videos where a roller coaster goes flying off the tracks and, you know, two people die and that kind of thing, right? So it does happen, but statistically, it's a very, very microscopic percentage of times that a roller coaster actually kills somebody. So there is some risk of death, but the risk is minute. It's a very tiny kind of risk. But still, the very first time that you get on a roller coaster, if you've never ever been on a roller coaster before, you can actually feel it. Your heart starts to beat faster. You start to, you know, to feel the kind of shakiness and that kind of thing. So all of those things are true. And in fact, I think probably even a better example of an activity that we do that is very similar to public speaking is going to a haunted house. I remember when I bet I was probably 9 or 10 years old, and we lived out in the country. We lived out in a little tiny town, and about, I'd say, maybe 3 or 4 miles away from our house, there was this real creepy house. And the only thing it was used for is from, I'm guessing, from sometime at the beginning of October until October 31st, that was used as a haunted house. So basically this house was only used about 1 month a year. And I'd drive by that every year from the time that I was 5, 6, 7 years old, when, you know, I'm riding in my parents' car and looking out the window and I see the signs up for the haunted house and everything. And I hear my friends, you know, that are kids at the elementary school tell me how they've been to haunted houses. And I always wanted to go. That seems kind of scary. You know, I want to kind of do that. And I remember, like I said, I think I was probably 9 or 10 years old, and I talked my dad into taking me. And we paid the fee, and there was this long line to get in. I bet there was probably 20, 25 people or so in front of us. And as we started getting closer to the door, I kept hearing all the sounds that were going on inside. And I got maybe third from the top, and I looked up at my dad, and I was like, I don't want to do this. And he's like, well, it's too late now. We've already paid the fee. And I'm glad he did, because after I kind of went through, I mean, the whole time, that first 10 minutes or so that we were kind of walking through the house, I was a wreck. I mean, it was so nerve-wracking. I was so nervous. It was one of those, it was actually not a pleasant experience. But as I kind of started walking around, I think the first time I kind of noticed that, you know, I knew these were just people in masks and stuff like that, but there, one of the rooms that we went into, you could actually see, it was so obvious that the person was fake. It was so obvious that at that point my nervousness kind of dropped down and I started to realize that, okay, well, there's really nothing that's going to happen to me. How many hundreds of other people have been through this haunted house in the last, you know, 48 hours, you know, so, and none of them have, you know, have gotten their arms amputated or anything like that. So, you know, the risk of failure is probably pretty low. So as a result, my nervousness dropped down pretty dramatically. And after that very first experience, and I realized how kind of fake it was, any additional haunted house that I've ever been through in my life, it was a whole lot easier. That's the way it is with public speaking if you have a positive experience along the way. So that first thing that you have to keep in mind is that you got to realize where that fear is coming from. And going back to the haunted house and the roller coaster, and those are kind of things that the fear is, it's real, but it's kind of manufactured by our body. It's that fight or flight activity that happens within our body that says, hey, there's a risk of failure. There's a risk of death. There's a risk of something bad happened to me. And as a result, you know, you should feel nervous here. And after you've experienced it a few times, that risk kind of lowers and it makes it a little easier to do that activity the next time. So the fourth or fifth or sixth time or 10th time or 20th time that you've been on a roller coaster, it's not nearly as nerve-wracking. You know, the 10th or 15th or 20th time you've been in a haunted house, it's not nearly as nerve-wracking. You know, so any of those other things that happen to us when we get nervous, as long as we're having a positive experience or have an experience that didn't cause that negative thing to occur, the fear will diminish pretty dramatically. So step number two, so after you've kind of figured out where that fear comes from, step number two is you want to lower the risk of failure. And so, like, for instance, you know, going back to some of those examples before, like the roller coaster, for example, you know, there's all kinds of safety harnesses. You know, if you didn't have a seatbelt, if you didn't have that lap bar that came down, there's a much higher risk now of your body flying out of that roller coaster when it goes, you know, off, goes down the big drop, right? So basically, there are certain things that you can do to lower the risk of failure. And because of those, that risk being lowered, it lowers our nervousness as well. So you don't necessarily have to go into a speech cold. You can actually do things to help you lower that risk. And so, for instance, the very first thing that I always encourage people to do is to start small. You don't have to go out and give this, you know, phenomenal motivational speech in front of 10,000 people in order to be a successful speaker. Start small. Some examples of places that you can do that is, you know, like, for instance, you might, if you're in some kind of club or social club of some kind, you can run as an officer, and a lot of times the officers have to give a speech, you know, at least in the officer meetings, and sometimes at every meeting. You can also, you know, report at meetings at your office, you know, so if you have staff meetings or something like that, every once in a while just kind of give a report on projects that you're working on, that kind of thing. Ask questions when other people are speaking. So if you're in the audience at a bigger speech, then when the speaker says, hey, are there any questions, then if you have a question, go ahead and ask it. That gives you more examples of speaking in front of a group. You can volunteer at your church, you know, any of those kind of things. Those little things, they give you those positive experiences that help you kind of build. Like, for instance, I in that very first podcast that I did, I kind of talked about that negative experience that I had when I was an intern in college. Well, I wanted to fix it, and I wasn't sure exactly how to do it. One of the very first things that I did when I got back to school in the fall after that internship was I ran as an officer in my fraternity. You know, these were my friends. You know, these were people that kind of knew me pretty well. So I ran as an officer that wouldn't have to give a lot of speeches. So I ran as the treasurer. So basically, the treasurer report, you know, I did that every, I can't remember whether we met every week or every month, but however often we met as a chapter, I had to give maybe a 2 or 3 minute speech, a very easy kind of speech. Let people know how much money was in the bank account. Let us know, you know, who's paid their dues and all that kind of stuff. All right. So it was a pretty easy speech, but it gave me the positive experiences that I could kind of fall back on when I had to speak in a different kind of venue. When I graduated from college, after I started my career, I was still feeling that nervousness, although it started to diminish a little bit. So one of the things that I did was when I joined a new church in the city that I kind of moved to, I found out that there was this children's church, and it had a puppet show every Sunday. So every Sunday, there were, I think there was probably six people that did a puppet show for the little kids. And I thought, well, number one, that sounds pretty fun. So, you know, I'll try that. So, and basically I did that for, I don't know, maybe 2 years or so. And after doing that for 2 years, the youth minister, the person who was in charge of the youth program there at the church, asked me to start teaching in the college age kids classes as well. So basically I kept kind of stepping it up a little bit. By the way, which is part of this, you know, even though one of the other additional things that you can do to lower the risk of failure is, you know, start small, but after you start small, you also want to keep increasing the difficulty. So you know, going back to what I did in church is I started out with a memorized script. You know, the children's church that I was working in had a memorized script with a puppet show. So all I had to do was, and I had it behind the scenes with me, you know, since it's a puppet show, I could actually have the script in front of me, so I didn't have to memorize anything, so it made it a whole lot easier. But then when I stepped up the difficulty, when I started teaching in the college-age kids church, you know, that made it a little bit more difficult for me. And after having a few successes there, you know, my comfort level increased as well. So basically, you don't want to sit on your laurels. You know, you don't want to just kind of keep doing the same thing over and over and over again. You want to kind of increase the difficulty, stretch yourself as you start to grow as a speaker, and it'll make it a whole lot easier. One of the easiest ways to do this, by the way, to really lower the risk of failure when you're speaking in front of a group, is to either attend a public speaking class or at least get a public speaking coach. The reason why those can really lower the risk is because you're in a controlled environment. When people go to the 2-day Fearless Presentations class, they're going to be given a series of about eight presentations in that 2-day class. So probably give three or four or five the first day, and then give another two or three the second day. And what the instructor is doing in that 2-day class is doing just the things that we're talking about here to really lower the risk. Number one, start off small, give a really small, easy to deliver presentation, and then continue to step up the difficulty as you kind of go back through. So every time that we ask a presenter to give a speech, we make the next speech a little bit more difficult than the last one that they had a big success with. So it makes it a whole lot easier now for them to gain confidence along the way. The added benefit of that, by the way, is that because there is a coach right there in the room, it really lowers that risk of failure. It makes it to where that coach is actually helping that person get better every single time. So, and that's one of the things that makes it a whole lot more difficult if you're trying to do this on your own, if you're trying to do this by yourself. So having that coach really, really, really helps. So step number three of the three things that you can do to just totally eliminate public speaking fear is you got to stack your successes. After every experience that you have in front of a group, you want to kind of look back on that presentation and say, okay, what exactly did I do right here? Now, keep in mind, the natural tendency for most of us when we're analyzing our performance is we want to say, oh my God, what did I do wrong so that I can fix it? That's the exact opposite of what you want to do if you're trying to gain confidence in a skill set. So it's a whole lot easier to stack your successes, to kind of focus on what you did right. And in fact, that's what in that example that I was given with the Fearless Presentations class, that's what our instructors do. So after every speech, we know that people are going to be overly self-critical. So basically what the instructor does is points out 2, 3, 4, 5 things that the person did well. And if you focus on those things, the next time you get up and give a speech, it makes the next speech easier. And then the instructor will identify new strengths or new things that you did well. And then every time you have a new success, the instructor is identifying new strengths, and that coach is helping you. So if the you know, analogy here that I like to use is, it's kind of like it's kind of like learning a skill like a sport, right? So if you have a good coach, if a coach just kind of continues to tell you what you're doing wrong, your confidence in that skill is going to drop pretty dramatically. When I was in college, I played football at Texas Tech, and we had a We had an offensive coordinator at the time that was really critical. I mean, he was just, they called him, the guys on the team called him Gargamel from like the Smurfs, he was just this really cantankerous old man, really mean. And one of the things that he liked to do is he was just overly critical of everything. He wanted everything to be perfect. If it wasn't perfect, he told you what wasn't perfect about it. And at the time, this was back in the early 90s, you know, all the way, and he was there all the way through the mid 90s or so. And one of the things that I saw happening consistently on the football team was that we would build up this huge lead in the first half. You know, we would like Texas Tech was just it was this high gunslinging kind of offense, and they would score tons of points. I mean, our offense would score, you know, 40 points sometimes, 30 something points in the first half, and then in the second half we'd score nothing. So we had to it got to kind of be a joke for those of us who were on the team. We'd kind of say, man, I hope we build up a big enough cushion so that the other team can't come back in the second half. And I after years and years and years after I kind of graduated from school and after I started doing a lot of coaching in the business world, I realized exactly what was happening. The offensive coordinator, because he was so critical, in that first half when people were doing, when the guys on the team were doing exactly what they were supposed to do, they were confident. They were on cloud nine and they were rolling over the opponents. But all it took was for one of those guys to make a single mistake. You make a single mistake and now all of a sudden they're focusing on that mistake and how that coach is going to rip them a new one on Sunday morning or Monday morning when they start watching the film. And as a result, the process just kind of deteriorated from there. And that's what happens to a lot of people in public speaking as well, is that we focus so much on the negative. We focus so much on what we did wrong that we kind of forget about what we did right. You know, we had 90% of our presentation was right and 10% was wrong, and we focus on the 10% versus the 90%, right? So it's kind of backwards. So focus on what you did right, and that's one of the reasons why having a good coach can really help you do that. In this point when you're stacking your successes, you want to look for opportunities to speak. Look for more opportunities to speak. I kind of talked about some of those in the previous bullet where we were talking about how to, you know, if you start small. But there's also, you can take on bigger activities as well. You can look for those opportunities that have probably come around in the past that we pass up. You know, a lot of times we disregard those, but there's a ton of situations that you've probably come across in your life or your career where you had the opportunity to take on a leadership role, or you had the opportunity to take on a situation where you're going to do more speaking. Maybe you're going to be like the president of your Rotary Club or Kiwanis Club or something like that. Maybe you have the opportunity to get a promotion. And, you know, I've seen people that have come through our public speaking class that will tell me that they actually passed up a promotion because they knew that if they got promoted, they'd have to speak more. And so as a result, they finally broke down and took the class because the boss was telling them they're going to get promoted anyway, right? So basically, those opportunities are there a lot of times, and we just pass them up. And if you don't see those opportunities that have been passed up, then go out and make your own opportunities. You know, there are a lot of people out there that I'll give you some examples. Like, for instance, let's say I'm a plumber, right? I'm a plumber, and so I don't really have a lot of opportunities to kind of speak in front of a group. Well, you know, go join a Rotary Club or something like that. Rotary Clubs will have speakers come in every week, and so they're always looking for somebody to kind of speak at the club. And so you can actually go in and give some tips on, you know, how to weatherize your house or something like that, or how to reduce your electricity costs, water cost or whatever it is. So basically, you can give presentations. If you don't see those opportunities in front of you, you can actually go out and make those opportunities. The reason why this last key concept in the ways to reduce that eliminate that public speaking fear is so powerful is that you have to really stack those successes, because our memories are short for the most part. So a lot of times when we have a success, if we don't have another success right away, we forget what we did to have that success, right? So a great example of this is I've been coaching my my son's Little League baseball team for a couple of years. And one of the things that I've kind of seen that happens most often, my son, his name is Ben, and he's probably 10 years old now. I think he's 10. When he first started baseball, anyway, he's a pretty athletic kid, so he was pretty decent at hitting the ball, but it was like a coach pitch. So the coach would pitch it, and so the coach would always pitch it right where the kid would need it so that he could hit it. And so in that scenario, Ben did really, really well. Well, as he got up into the kid pitch, it became a little bit more difficult, because now as the kids got better and better at pitching, now they're trying to get the other kid to swing at balls, right? So they're trying to get, it becomes more complicated. And so one of the things that we would do is what I would do as a coach is we'd set up drills in the once a week practice on batting practice. You know, we teach them how to bat and get them some good practice. In addition to that, though, I didn't just have Ben practice that once a week. You know, every once in a while we'd go to the batting cages, and then every once in a while we'd go in the backyard and I'd get some wiffle balls and have him, you know, bat the wiffle balls at me. And if I did that with him, I don't know, maybe 3 times a week, he got a lot better. If I did it with him just once a week, he kind of stayed the same, right? And sometimes even got a little worse. And so because I was spending that extra time with him, because he was doing that those extra reps, he was getting those extra reps, I think his first year at kid pitch, for the first 6 games, he was batting 1,000. He basically was on base every single time, but it was because of that extra time that he spent, you know, really working on batting. Some of the other kids on the team, you know, obviously didn't do as well because they were just coming to practice and that was it. That was all. They weren't doing anything at home, so they weren't stacking those successes. Well, your public speaking career is the same way. You know, if you're just speaking once every 6 months or once every 2 years or something like that, it's going to be very, very difficult to reduce that public speaking fear. You're going to have to speak a whole lot more often and really stack those successes. And every time that you have one of those speaking engagements, then at the end of it, do what I was suggesting before, which is kind of analyze what you did well and then focus on that so that you can continue to do those things. Make it a little bit more difficult the next time. Increase that difficulty level. If you do all of those things, you're going to be able to eliminate your public speaking fear very, very quickly. Real quickly, I'm going to ask you, before we actually end the podcast here, I really need a favor of you guys. One of the things that we really need is we really need more reviews on the podcast. So the best place to post a review is on iTunes or on the iPhone podcast program. The easiest way to do that, by the way, if you're listening to this on the web or if you haven't actually gone through a podcast app on a cell phone, if you just go to Siri and say, Siri, search for the Fearless Presentations podcast, it's going to pull it up. And when it pulls it up in the search feature, there'll be a place there for you to kind of leave a review for us. And just leave an honest review. I mean, obviously, we really enjoy all the 5 stars, but leave us an honest review. Tell us what you like about the podcast, and if you think we can improve it in any way, make sure and give us that as well. You can also send us an email at podcast@fearlesspresentations.com if you have suggestions or if you have other things that you want us to add in on the podcast so that we can do this more consistently. So thanks a lot for being a part of the Fearless Presentations podcast.
Subscribe to this podcast for new public speaking secrets each week.